Okay, so I just wanted to say something quick before Lena gets going, and that is that as you're listening to these questions and answers about what it's like, to be awake, your mind is going to immediately probably go to at some point that just seems impossible for me to live like that. Like there's no way I can live like that. So I just and or sort of jealousy and why isn't this happening for me? This is for all of us, and it just to notice that when it comes up that you don't need to do anything with the information. Just the desire to live in that place is going to make it happen. It's proof that it's already happening, rather. So, okie dokie. Go ahead, Lena.
Okay, yes, great. So first I wanted to ask you, like we all know the reflections in the life, like we have accidents, illnesses, all kind of malfunctions in the body, or lack of money or lack of something, and adversities of many kind, and then I just wanted to like know, do they all stop like totally when you are enlightened? And of course I know there's a life, things happen, but like do they mostly like stop in that form, and maybe just something normal life happens and you just don't react to those anymore? Or
It's a little bit of both, really. Like something could happen. It's a really good question. Something could happen to me that everyone else would see as an adversity or something, something gone wrong. But there's immediately an idea that this is something new coming and some expansion. There's a sense that if something is changing in the reflection, it must be for more, because the manifestation is always becoming more.
great.
So, like, I give the example to hopefully try and make it a bit clearer. You might have heard me say I've got a flat tire on my car, which how that happens when it's just parked on my driveway, I've got no idea. But before that would have been an endless source of worry, like how am I going to pay for it fixing? I don't have the money to fix it. I don't know how I'm going to get it to a garage to fix it because we're in lockdown, can't really drive it anywhere, it's not supposed to, and it would have just tormented me endlessly. But I went out, I was going to do some food shopping, and I noticed the tire was flat, and I just started laughing. I thought, oh, that's interesting, and that's it's like, see, let's see what's going to come out of this. That's the kind of sense, there's an excitement almost when something goes wrong now, which is a weird way to look at it, I know. But so I got I made a list of the food stuff that I really needed that day and went for a walk to the local supermarket, which was really nice. It was sunny, it was lovely. And on the way back up the hill, I got a good cardiovascular workout, which I'm supposed to be doing more of because I have a health condition. So, and I've been avoiding that if I'm honest. So I've got a good cardio workout. And when I got down to the local supermarket, there was no queue, which was, it's just unheard of these days. Walked straight in there, got what I needed, came back. And then I got a big food shop delivered and managed to get a delivery slot the next day, which is again very rare these days in England. And I was sat on the phone 3 or 4 days later. I sat on the phone talking to Maggie, and she said, you really need to get that tire fixed because we can't take you down to get your spare fixed, with the lockdown. And as I was sat there talking to her, this mobile tire fitting service van drove past my window. And I live a little street that's a dead end, so nobody comes down here unless they need to. And so I took his phone number down, called, and the guy came out the next day, and he said he'd actually taken a wrong turn. When I saw him, he wasn't even supposed to be in that road. So he changed my tire, and we ended up talking about meditation because he was asking me what I do working from home. So he ended up taking the website details, and so something that's gone wrong, how I would have seen it before, it would have been a source of worry financially. And the money to fix the tire showed up 3 days before the flat tire. It's a different way of living.
Yes. So things happen, but yeah, okay. Yes, and
I think answer, sorry.
Yeah, no, that wasn't long at all. And I think it's really important to have like practical, like everyday answers and stories that we know exactly what it means. Yeah. We have all read all these high level consciousness books and yeah. Understood. I like them also, but I still want to know what it means.
Well, you know, for me, it was like it was this dreamy mystical state, and all I'd heard about was being sitting on top of a mountain or in a forest or in an ashram, and you know, that's great if they're teaching, but like it left me with this feeling that I can't be enlightened and just still get on with my normal daily life. You know, it's not possible to be a mother and a partner and, you know, to run a business when you're enlightened. You know, that was the idea. So I think it helps, doesn't it, to hopefully hear about normal things.
Yes, definitely. So this is just about manifestation is always going to the higher place, like all the time. Yeah,
absolutely. If we just leave it alone, it's going to appear as something. Even if it looks like a flat tire, it's got to be something, and it never looks like anything good. It always looks like something has gone wrong, you know. But your mind just can't go there anymore. You can't pick up that thought anymore after awakening.
Okay, great. And I think you also already mentioned that, like, the everyday miracles that I was asking. So they come in like this kind of form, or do you have any other examples or like?
Gosh, there's just so many. In fact, they're continuous. They're absolutely continuous. Like the start of this course, my laptop died. Just began to.
Forever.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah, I was laughing at that because not laughing at you, but I was laughing similarly. Again, it would have been an endless source of worry, but some money showed up the day after, and then 24 hours later, I'm sat with this new laptop. So it wasn't even something bad then, and it also gave me. I still have a little bit of a karmic pattern around frustration, and it's gone from everywhere else in my life except for technology. And after much phone conversations with Maggie about how to set up the wireless connection, I realized there was a driver missing from the new laptop. That's why it wouldn't pick up my Wi-Fi. But I was able to recognize there must be some blockage in the way, some thought in the way. Whereas before I would have blamed myself, why can't I get this set up? Everyone else can set up their own new laptop. Why am I just, you know? It would have just been so. There's so many. Like we needed someone to help us learn how to promote myself as a business, you know. And somebody showed up to do that. There's been so many people came at the right moment for things that we need to help with. Even with this course, there's many miracles that have happened with it, and. Money, you know, money showing up before I need it instead of way after I need it, you know, like with the laptop. Gosh, there's so many I can't even actually remember. I used to keep a list of them all, but I ended up with like 17, literally 17 notebooks. Maggie could probably tell you more, actually. If you can remember any, Maggie, then do feel free to jump in, or Ian, because it's just, I should have thought about this before, but.
It just like you said, people showing up at the right time whenever as the business is growing, from my point of view regarding your business, I've been doing lots of things, and as it's got busier, we're kind of trimming down what I do and offering stuff to other people. And every time now that there's something where I think, right, I really could do with somebody helping me with this, I just put it out there and someone just pops up. Oh, did you know I do this? It's like, oh, brilliant. And it's happened so many, many, many times. But there's been loads of miracles, like you say, you forget them because there's so many. Not that you take it for granted, but you know they will come.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Rich, did you have a question?
Yeah, just a quick question. I was noticing a similarity between all the things you were talking about, and would you describe it as like synchronicity? Because I had an experience, well, a period of a month or two where I was in that place all the time, and life was like ridiculously synchronized, and it was like what you're describing there. So is it synchronicity?
Not really, because that is in duality, the very concept, two things synchronizing together. It's more like knowing that all of this is me, like there's nothing other than me, and as such, the reflection has to mirror what I know. There's no doubt. It cannot reflect back to me something that's not, it can't reflect back anything other than myself. You know, myself is peaceful now and happy and abundant and, you know, quite the opposite of what I used to be. And there's not even an in or out of the flow, even, you know, getting in the flow was a very popular concept for myself and before, but I ditched that, you know. So there's synchronicity. It just looks like everything shows up before you need it, and you don't even have to have the thought that you need it, and there's just an expectation that will continue, and it keeps on showing up before you need it, and each time it shows up in an even more wonderful way, you know, to before I would have had the sense that I'd really have to strive to get something I want, a lot of efforting, a lot of trying spiritually, and then it just shows up, and I didn't even know I needed it before it showed up, you know. There's like a sense of being surprised and delighted and in awe everything, but also not surprised at the same time, because it's just the natural state. It becomes normal miracles. And you know, does that give you a sense of it?
Yeah, I think it does sound like the same sort of thing. I think it's maybe just a terminology issue, because all that sense of everything just turning up when you need it, and life just continually bringing surprises, and even like you say, things arriving, the money arrives, and then the purpose of the money comes afterwards, all that sort of stuff.
But now more money arrives than what I need, you know, there'll be always some spare. It's like you remember when you were like 4 or 5 years old and you come running downstairs on Christmas morning and open your presents, before you open your presents? I feel like that all the time.
Right.
You know, all the time. It's like you open your eyes and you're like, in the morning, like, what's today's going to bring? Knowing that it has to be the reflection. Before it was a reflection of my lack and limitation in my own self, you know, so.
Good. You won't get in the gifts and your Santa as well.
Yeah, exactly. You're the best of both worlds. Fantastic.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. And let's see. Can you hear me?
We can. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Great. One more thing about this is that do you still have do you get some kind of inspirations or like ideas that, okay, I want to do this, but you don't know maybe how to do it exactly at that moment, but then the means and ways come later?
Sometimes I'll just find myself doing something. I'll find my body doing something and I've no idea why.
Yes.
Like the other day, I've been going for a walk in the lockdown and went for a walk, but just decided to go a completely different way. It wasn't a conscious thought at all. Just found myself walking that way and then ended up having a conversation with someone, you know, that was obviously feeling a little bit down. So we just had a little, they didn't say that, but it was obvious that they just needed some human connection. So we had a conversation. Sometimes there's a sense of it'll come as an idea, an inspiration to do something. But now there is, before I would have rushed to try to do it, before there was any, now there's just a sitting with the sense that something's coming and allowing it. And I'll know when the right time to do it is, because I'll find myself doing it. Like used to sit with an idea for a book I wanted to write. And then I'd try to write it and it just wouldn't flow. Now there's just an idea. Okay, this is what I want to put into words. And it's just a natural allowance of the time, the timing being right. You know, when it's the right time to write, I'll find myself sitting down to write it rather than this incessant sense of I've got to get this done and I've got to do it right. So sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's an inspiration or a feeling. Mm-hmm. And sometimes something is just happening, mm-hmm. you know, by it seemingly by itself.
Okay, great. And yeah, and about those feelings, like you said something like you, it's possible to live totally without negative feelings, and that puzzles me a little bit because I think there's like the human life is coming with all kinds of feelings, but we don't get like attached to them or like dragged around by them anymore than. Or do you like get angry, or maybe if your loved ones get sick or die or something, and wouldn't you like be grieving or upset or something like that?
Yeah, it's I think the only negative emotion I felt in a very long time was frustration. Like I said the other day, every now and again a slight tinge of irritation, but it is it's very different. It's like I've said it, I think I've said it before, but this giant football stadium, you know, like 50,000 capacity football stadium, and there's one guy right at the front shouting that he's frustrated, but there's just this vastness of your being that you can't, something might arise for a few seconds, but there's no ability to, before, if some emotion would have arisen, I would immediately be, well, why am I still feeling this? Why is it going on? You know, but it, with the loss, you know, with the sort of loss and grief, I mean, I don't know what my body would do if the worst happened to one of my children or something, but there's been a deep and sustained investigation into is there anything other than me? And right to the end of that assumption where there's clear knowing that there isn't anything other than me, that even if somebody's body disappeared, it would only be that there's no sense that they've gone, because they're, it's only the visible part, the part of them that's visible to my eyes and that I can hear when they speak, you know, and I can hug them. That's the part of them that's gone. It's shifted back into its invisible nature. It's not even gone. There's nothing happened in that. You know, like most people with death, there's a real idea that something's gone, that they've left, something's finished. That idea has completely disappeared from my consciousness, because it's the one is everywhere all the time. It cannot disappear. It cannot be absent. You know, what is death really? It's the holding together of the physical body in a particular shape, sustaining with the life force, and just taking that life force away. The body goes to its elemental nature, you know, starts to do what it does. But there's no idea there that something's gone or lost, or that even something's changed. It might be a strange way to think about it, but you know, hopefully that's the purpose of asking these questions. That when my dad passed away 7 years ago, and I just watched his energy, his aura, just very slowly detach from his body over a good couple of hours. And you know, at the same time, the heart rate and the blood pressure and the oxygen saturation monitors were just slowly falling. And he'd been very physically ill, very limited in his views. His mind was sharp as a tack, but he couldn't walk and he was almost blind. So he was very frustrated and very depressed. And I was crying when he passed finally, but out of a sense of joy, because I could see, you know, he wasn't gone. And even when we held the funeral, there was... next to the vicar that was doing the reading for him, there was just this beautiful energy standing next to the vicar. You know, it's just obvious he wasn't gone. You know, the subtle body that holds the desires and not, you know, the individual idea of ourselves. But I remember crying quite vividly because I was watching everyone around me and they were in such pain. And there was a sense of, I wish they weren't hurting. I wish they could see what I can see, you know, that brought some tears. And luckily everyone thought I was crying too because I was sad, because it's hard to explain to someone that doesn't understand this or has no interest in spirituality, you know, like my mom or my sister that were really feeling that he'd gone and that something had ended and they could never. The essence of grief is I've lost something and it's never coming back. I've lost something that I need to be happy. That's what that thought is saying, that feeling, isn't it? Absolutely. It's this very different way. But if you can imagine, you can sort of get a taste of it right now. If you could never imagine that anything was gone ever again, you know, it's just turned back to invisible. But as you're realizing, hopefully in the course, the invisible is much more real and permanent anyway than anything visible, which is temporary.
Yes. Great. Yes. And yes, and then I had this question about, we were questioning that nothing really exists in my body and all those, and but still if we have some illnesses or something like that, bad eyesight or allergies mm-hmm. or whatever anyone has, and that can we question those or should we just go straight to like questioning, do I even have a body or I don't know.
It depends. If it's something that's chronic, an illness that's chronic, then it might be worth questioning. I had a shoulder injury a while ago. I used to clean houses for a living, and I got to the point where I just couldn't work anymore. It was so painful, and I had to just give up the business. And, you know, there was obviously my body's trying to tell me, it's reflecting something back to me. So I had to really look at that, and it was really this sense of life being hard work. Actually, it was my awakening. It was a symptom of my awakening being hard work at that point, you know, like I'm never going to get there. So our body will be reflecting back to us something that we, you know, that we're believing inside. The root cause of any illness or disease is always something within our consciousness that is being reflected, because our body is the self, but it's the first reflection of the self as well. So anything that we're holding inside is going to be reflected in our body. Perhaps it depends where our karmic patterns lie. Some of them lie, some of us have it shows up financially, some of us it shows up physically in our body, some of us it shows up in our relationships, you know. So if your karmic patterns are really trying to tell you something through your body, trying to sort of bring attention, then it's perhaps a good idea to look at that and question, like, what you can look at the particular condition, look at the emotion it brings when you feel it, you know, like when it happens. Or for me with the shoulder, there was a huge sense of being limited. You know, all of a sudden I couldn't drive, I couldn't pick up even a pen. Like it was immediately a lot of pain. So it was an immediate sense, I can't, you know, I think we talked about it, I can't do what I want, I can't get what I want. Being very limited, a sudden sense of being very, very limited. And a very physical sense of life hurts, you know, because every time I moved it hurt. So you can sort of see the beliefs talking through the body in a way.
Yes. Okay. And then I was wondering, do you like know intuitively or things about other people or about future or something like that?
Sometimes there'll just be this sense, I should go here or I should do this, and I have no idea why. Just a sense, you know. Or sometimes my body just moves somewhere, and I'll find myself in a place where I obviously needed to be. Like sometimes there's a couple of times when I went food shopping, decided to go that day rather than go the day after. And when I got there, there was a homeless guy outside the supermarket, and he was an ex-military. It was a veteran, and he was suffering from PTSD and a few other things that he couldn't hold down a job when he ended up homeless, you know, long story. But there was just a real sense. I just sat down on the pavement with him and talked to him for like 15 minutes, and it wasn't anything spiritual. There was just a sense that I needed to be there. He needed some human voice, you know. And I told him about someone I knew that was also a veteran and also had PTSD, you know, and that it still affects them, you know, even today. And the understanding and the self-acceptance, you can see it in his eyes. Like, he didn't need his physical situation to change, he just needed to stop blaming. He was blaming himself. So, like, did I go food shopping for my food shopping, or did I go for him? I don't know. You know, it's just, it just happens that way. Kind of, you find yourself in the right place at the right time. And there's like, a thousand moments like that where there's a, I think part of being awake is knowing that you're radiating this presence. I don't feel it now because it's normal for me, but I can see the effects it has on other beings, you know. So there's this sense of sometimes you have to go do certain things or say certain things because the presence wants to work on someone, to heal someone or take some karma off them or something. Does that explain it? Does that answer?
Yes. Great. And then I have this thing about cause and effect, which is
a nice, easy question, yay.
Yeah. But like a normal question would be like, if we would like to lose weight, for example, and we have learned that, okay, if you do these exercises and you eat this and that and blah, 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 and then you will get these results. And if that might work if you believe it and you don't have like...
It didn't work at all for me.
Yeah. I know.
It had the opposite effect, actually. Yeah.
So, but do we... Is it like... not restricted, but is it useful to use it if it works for you, or how would you do it? Like, if you would lose weight right now, and
I could tell you a whole story about that. It's
okay.
I went through some very challenging times before I woke up, and a part of that, one of my old patterns was to eat, you know, I think I coped with it by eating ice cream and watching movies, you know. Nothing wrong with that, but afterwards there was, you know, quite a little bit of extra there to get rid of. So this idea had crept up on me that I needed to lose some weight, you know, and so I set about doing, because when I was younger, I had, after my eldest was born, I lost quite a lot of weight easy. I was just determined to do it, and I did the same things this time. 20 years later, you know, and it has the opposite effect. And what is going on here? You know, I've done the same things exactly, and I'm actually putting more weight on, you know. It makes no sense. And I eventually came to figure out, like, all these thoughts I was believing, like, I get on the scales, the bathroom scales, and it gives me this number, and immediately there's agreement, I weigh this much. Right now, actually, I don't weigh anything, I'm formless. And, you know, neither does the body either, right? It's formlessness too. And then I recognize this sense that I need, you know, I know we've talked about it in the course, I want and I need to lose weight. Like, how can it ever come off if I'm agreeing? What I could get away with 20 years ago, I could get away with the thought I need and I want because it was true for me then as a person. But now it's just not true, is it? You know, I'm recognizing more and more, I don't need anything, you know. So there was a real investigation of that and letting go of the desire to lose weight, which my mind, you know, at the time wasn't happy about. Like, it's just going to keep going on if you let go of this desire, mind was saying. I'm like, well, it's really not working to hold on to this desire. It's having the opposite effect. And actually, this is good, really good question, because there's a little miracle happened in it as well, and also something seemingly went wrong. But anyway, sorry. So I let go of the idea of needing to lose weight and just really sort of looked at accepting how I am. And I did this thing that all women hate, which is actually buy a bigger, clothes size, actually go out and get a whole new set, you know. And before that would have been a failure, having to buy bigger clothes. I would have seen that as an absolute failure. And that things, you know, worked on changing my diet. But again, that came from a respect for the body as it is the self, rather than looking in the mirror and going, God, I don't like what I see. Totally different reason for trying to eat healthier. And then I got diagnosed with, I can never say it, familial hypercholesterolemia about 6 months ago, which means my body doesn't produce an enzyme that reabsorbs cholesterol from the bloodstream. So to take some medication, and also supposed to eat better, and I'm supposed to do more cardiovascular exercise. And as part of that, before that would have been a disaster, you know, having to take medication. I would have seen that as a really bad thing, and I would have been so against medication, and it would have been brought a great fear, you know, because the statistics for somebody, I think most women have had a heart attack by 55, by men by 55, and most women by the age of 70 that have this condition and don't treat it. So that would have got great fear. But because it happened after I'd woken, it was like, wow, this must be something good, even this. Mm-hmm. And it's just become another nudge, another good reason to continue to look after my body. But it's done from a place of love and wanting to respect the body, because I'm actually feel quite lucky to have one and to be awake at the same time, you know that sense. So as part of that diagnosis and my life changes because of that, I'm actually losing weight quite slowly without even trying now. It's just happening as a side effect almost, you know, now that the desire has been let go of, sort of everything happens that way. It's a really good example that actually you brought up, because I think it's quite a common thing for a lot of people, isn't it? And,
yes.
You know, where I was still really identifying with my body, I need to lose weight. It's like, no, actually, that's my body, not me, you know.
Okay, yes. And what else?
Sounds like you got a long list there.
Yes. Yes.
Marcy, I think, wants to ask a question, if you don't mind. Is it okay interrupting you like this? Is it?
Of course.
I hope it's not too distracting in the flow.
Of course it's okay, yeah.
Oh, lovely. Marcy, yeah. Did you want to ask something?
Yes, hi.
Good morning, by the way.
Like, good morning. For me, it's morning.
Yeah, no, it's early.
Like with Caroline, I was curious to know your actual, I know, I've heard for years awakening is not an experience, and yet it seems to be like a moment in time where something shifts. So I was wondering, you know, about your actual awakening. So.
Okay. Let's come back to that Caroline one at the end. Should we come back to that one?
I know it's not prescriptive, you know, like everybody thinks, oh, this is exactly how it's going to happen for me, for the me. But, yeah. You know, just curious. And when?
We could look at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you asking me if there was an actual experience? Time. Are you asking if there was an actual moment or an experience?
Yeah, when things shifted for you and how they did. Like with Caroline, how she spoke about it.
I didn't have anything like Caroline had.
See, like everybody's,
I did. I had very explosive moments, but you wouldn't have known they were going on if you looked. I'd be just sat here like this, just inside. Suddenly, there was this revelation of like, all of this world has always been an imagination, and I've made it all up the entire time. Suddenly, that was just like really clear. It was later there were some tears and stuff like that, but the actual, I had several moments where it was quite like an atomic bomb went off inside, just a very clear understanding suddenly, and it kept exploding again and again and again, and each time it did, it destroyed some more of the old structure, you know, and what was left. I had to sort of contemplate and take that to the end. But they weren't, I've never had like fantastic experiences. You know, I used to get really jealous of people. Like I was watching a Muji satsang, and you know, people throwing themselves around the floor and you know, crying and laughing and shaking and doing all kinds of things. That's never happened to me, you know. And then suddenly boom, but it was just inside, you know, really strong understanding, obvious all of a sudden, when it was completely unclear the second before. Suddenly it's just obvious. Why that happened then, I still can't tell you, other than sort of the sustained momentum of wanting to see and a growing conviction inside that it had to happen. If I just kept on that path of wanting to know what reality was, you know, that if there was a cause, then that was it. But as to why it happened in that moment, you know, so we all think like our profound moments are going to be in satsang, but for me, they've just been like, once when I was just sat watching Netflix, like, oh my God, you know, just pause the thing I was watching and, oh my God, nothing is at all like I think it is. One time sat out the back in my garden with a cup of tea, suddenly, you know, something came clear. One time in the cinema with my daughter, you know, so it's, you just never know. So don't be looking for those explosive moments. That might be how it shows up, but it certainly wasn't for me. You know, it was the inevitable outcome really of a sustained contemplation has to be the revelation of what is true. But it could happen while you're walking around a supermarket. You'll just be suddenly very clear and obvious, you know. It's usually when we're not trying, that's when it reveals itself, isn't it? So.
Thank you.
Good.
Okay, yeah, and yeah, I was wondering, do you still have, like you said, there are no beliefs in that ultimate state, but you said you might still have some, like, thoughts, and of course, I don't know if it's thoughts when you are talking to other people or you're calculating or doing something like that, and then, or just an occasional thought pops up just by itself. And how would you like say, is it thinking or what is it?
It's mostly, excuse me, activities just happen. I just find myself doing stuff like now there's no plan of what I'm going to say, which might be quite obvious, but sometimes a thought will pop up every now and again. Mostly it's just silence. Every now and again some old remnant will pop up, or, you know, some like with the laptop, I was trying to figure it out how to do it. There was just plugging it in, it's not working, I was just looking. And then this little thought arose, you know, so I knew you weren't going to be able to do it. I knew I couldn't do it, or something like that. But it's even when it pops up now, it's like, oh, that's curious that that's still in there. You know, like there's no ability to believe it. So mostly everything's just happening in silence. My body's just watching my body do whatever it needs to do. Every now and again, there's a thought that pops up, but there's long, long periods of just no thought at all, you know, very, very long periods of that. And even when thought does speak, there's no capacity to believe it anymore. you know, even if the thoughts, you know, like the negative emotions are a symptom of believing those thoughts when they pop up. So when you can't believe them anymore, there isn't those negative emotions to go with them. They're just voice. It's just like an empty voice, a voice in the emptiness. You're not good enough. I'm like, yes, I am. You know, it's different. I didn't believe for a long time that it was possible to live without thinking going on, you know, that something would be, that'd be, I absolutely believed I'd be incapable of functioning without thought. You know, how am I going to drive to do the school run and do all that stuff while, if thought's not going on? But there was a seeing that thought has never caused any of that to go on anyway. My body's just doing it all. So it's absolutely fine to just not think. And then it became clear there's nothing to think about. There really isn't anything else to think about. That just, mind just kind of went, what? You know, it just couldn't grasp that at all. It was clear to me, but my mind, it's like shocked into silence in a way. Still, he still tries to say something every now and again, like, hey, yeah, you know, remember me.
Okay.
Maggie and Ian, sorry, after the question.
It was just to add to what you were saying there, because Lena's questions to me, which are brilliant.
They're amazing, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they're about how you are being as an enlightened being. And from working with you, listening to
tell some embarrassing stories now.
Oh yes. but we won't go there. Working with Helen, and we have many conversations, and we have, like, now we do video chats to look at how things are going to progress and how we might change this and how we might change that. So from a certain point of view, nothing has changed the way she discusses things, but in many ways it's very different, because you can hear her, like, there's been something we're thinking about doing. I say thinking, but it's an idea came to Helen. She discussed it with us, and what do you think, and how should we do it? And we couldn't get anywhere with it, so we just said, right, let's just leave it. So there's still a working model that happens, but it's very much from a different place now. There isn't we need to sort this out, or we need to get this done, and look what's happened here. And it flows a lot easier on the whole.
We might still say the words. I might say to you, what do you think we should do? You know, how will we make this work? But there's nothing behind those words anymore, is there? You know.
No, it's from my point of view, where I am in my awakening, there is still things happen for me that I need to look at a lot more than for Helen, and I see that. And there's been something this morning, and it's just like, I need to look at that. But my own, there isn't a worrying or a trying anymore, and I've been able to see that in Helen. And it's a lot simpler. We can just have a conversation. What do we think about this? What should we do about that? And it just happens.
It's like knowing the end of the movie, isn't it? You're watching the movie, but you know the end is spectacular.
Yeah.
You don't know what that end is, but you know it's spectacular.
Yeah. And that's another example of the miracles as well, Lena. Often we will ring each other or communicate, and the other one will say, oh, I was just going to contact you. And there's been a lot of... As Rich used, synchronicity in that, but not in the true sense of it, but it just happens all the time. There's a lot of natural flow that goes on now. So I just wanted to kind of add to what you were saying from my point of view of working with you, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for that. It sounds weird, but I can't remember all the miracles because they're just so continuous. And
yeah.
They are phenomenal still, and sometimes I just can't remember them because of that, because I don't really have any memory or sense of recall. So it's helpful. You should probably notice when I'm like, It sounds strange that you can't remember them because they're continuous, you know. Yeah. It's just always.
Just one other thing that Ian mentioned when you asked her whether you asked her something about how if she comes up with an idea or something. Sure, Helen won't mind us saying, but Helen used to come up with a lot of ideas and wants to do them instantly. And some of them are really good and some of them weren't. And we changed things so much so quickly. Mm. It was like being on a massive roller coaster, wasn't it?
It was slightly.
It's not like that now.
Frantic, I think the word would be the word.
But now it's a much more natural progression and things change more naturally, don't they? Mm. And yeah, it's easier.
Thank you.
I'll show.
No, it's good. Thank you for contributing. I'll take one more question from Lena, and then Amy's waiting. So we'll come to Amy after this next question from Lena.
Yes. Okay. I think we've been covering this a little bit, like problem solving. Like sometimes, like you have something happens, and you maybe quite immediately know what to do, or it just you have the knowing that it will come in some way. Mm-hmm. But. I think it's in this point when you have one foot on the other side of the door and one foot on the other, like when we are not really there yet. And I think many of us have had like something, maybe have to make a choice or quickly, or you have to get money, or you have to solve some problem like quickly, maybe today or in some time. Yeah. Frame, and what would you suggest to do in that kind of situation, or how would
it's good because I really practiced I really worked on the idea that I'm not making a decision, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. Okay. For the mind and body, so there was a relaxation when I realized I can't get it wrong, you know, like if I have to make a decision now, there seems to be two options. And I don't get sometimes I'll get a feeling, you know, somebody will say, let's do it this way. And there's just no energy or feeling and nothing happens inside. There's no inner life force response in the body to that suggestion. And then the other option, or, like, you know, if there's three or four options, one of them will just feel like, yeah, let's do that. Like, no idea why. And it may logically seem to be the wrong choice, you know, like logically, like that's not going to work. But there's just a sense, let's do this one. And there's a knowingness as well. Like if I say let's turn right at the end of this road, and we're supposed to go left, you know, if left is the right way, then by the time we get to the top of the road, the right turn will be blocked off. There'll be roadworks or something, you know, or I'll turn right and then I'll be diverted all the way back around somehow through a traffic jam or something, and I'll end up going where I was supposed to go anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, so that you can't, it's not our thoughts that are causing things to happen anyway. You know, so I might have the thought, okay, I'm making a decision to do it this way, I'm going to do this. But that just spontaneously came from the silent place that knows the best option anyway. And you know, we've all had multiple examples of thinking we know what the right choice is, and life showing us it's not that one. You know, it wasn't that one, you should have done that one, you know. So you can't really you can't really get it wrong. Like if I say this, we're going to do it this way, and like Maggie and Ian were just saying, it, you know, I have this bright idea, you know, how to help people, a sudden revelation, like let's do this in satsang, we'll do this, it's great, and it just absolutely fails, you know, and then something just starts happening naturally over here by itself, grows on its own. And but there's no ability to blame myself and say, oh, I got that wrong, I made the wrong decision, you know. It just is. So the more you trust that, the more you just find yourself moving in the right direction anyway, and that may come in the form of a thought, let's do it this way, let's make this, I decide this. But there's no personal self behind those words, you know. There's no, which means there's no blaming yourself if it goes wrong, and no, you know, I did it right. You know, either just life was going that way, and there's a movement with it.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, great. Thank you so much for all the answers and stories.
Lovely. Have you got more questions? I'll come back to you after Amy, or are you?
I'm not sure. I think almost all of them are covered, so I'll just, thanks.
If there's anything else you want me to go back over and have a look at, I'll have a chat with Amy, and then we'll open it up in general for if there's questions. Lovely, thank you. Amy, do you want to ask your question?
Yeah, I just wondered, is it okay to ask sort of personal questions, or do you want to keep on this topic?
I think as long as it's useful in terms of what's, I think there's a real value, I think we were saying earlier, in knowing how it is to live like this in an everyday way, isn't it, you know, so.
Yeah, so even if I ask a personal question, it's like coming into that.
Yeah, there isn't really any, having said that, there's some stuff like, you know, I'm not going to tell you exactly how much weight I wanted to lose or something like that, you know. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. One question was around practice, because I was reading back through the Soul of the New Ego book, so I'm just tuning into the first week a little bit again. Mm-hmm. And I read something about with the inquiry questions, it's best to tune in, like maybe take it into a sitting practice, like doing it during a sitting practice. And what I found is that like the dissolving just is sort of happening in and out of the day for me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of taken the inquiry questions like that as well. And I'm just kind of asking them all this, you know, like during the day. And I just wanted to clarify if that, well, your feelings around that, if that's okay, or if that's, you know, just, it's, you know, I need to kind of tune in more, or.
I think eventually the directness of the practice gets so intense that you, it was for me, at least, it was, it moved very, very from something I was sitting down and doing to just being an all-day thing. I'm not talking like a constant remembering, but whenever my mind wasn't busy and I remembered, there was this questioning that went on all the time, as often as I could. It just became an obsession, actually. The more I was asking this question, like, what am I, or what is reality, or whatever I was asking, what is it that's seeing? There was a growing sense that there was something I hadn't realized yet. I didn't know what that was, but there was this growing sense that this isn't reality as I see it now. So there was just this, it kind of fueled this questioning to just become more and more intense, maybe. Not like desperate intense, but just I have to find this out. Like there's no other way. And I'm not going to forget this question. It just became more and more important. Whereas I'd had periods before where I'd started questioning like this, but life or my mind or something had distracted me, and I'd realised like 3 months later, like, oh, I've forgotten, you know. Mm. There was just something that kind of built up. Mm. And you know, there's the tuning in happens, first of all, as a formal thing, doesn't it, where you put some time aside and you'll recognize. But afterwards, you're walking around a supermarket going, well, I'm aware of all of this. There's awareness always present, you know, whether it's watching thoughts or watching somebody shopping, or it's so that the tuning in even is going on all the time, isn't it? It's like more and more just obvious that all of this is happening. I can hear all this
when I read
silence.
That, I thought, oh, am I bypassing or being naughty? I kind of crept in, and when I read that, I thought, check.
It's a good question, because I felt like the more I was asking the question, the more it felt limiting after a while to just sit down and do it at a particular time each day.
Mm.
I might still have done that as well. I might have sat, but it wasn't such a like, okay, turn my phone off, close the curtains, I'm going to be aware of awareness. It was just more like
kind of
I was sitting with a cup of tea, and it was just, there's awareness right now, you know, where is it, what is it, how far does it reach, you know, all that type of thing. So it was more like It moved from a doing to a being. It's the best way I could describe it. It wasn't anything I was doing anymore, which it never was, of course, but it just became clearer. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
It does, thank you. I've got another little one, if that's okay.
Yeah, well, sure.
It's more of a personal thing. There's a new partnership going on, and it's the first partnership I've had since this dissolving sped up so much. So it's a really different way of relating, and I'm kind of finding my way with it a little bit about sort of when to communicate and when to just sort of do my... So I don't know if it's just something that I do just have to sort of work through, or I just wanted to, if you had any thoughts on that, about perspective in that moment when things are a little bit triggered. And normally I just kind of go and do my own thing and, you know, work with the energies. But they're in a relationship, obviously there's, you know, there's dialogues happening and things like that. And
you can just say, hold on a minute while I go and work through. just wait there while I go contemplate. And yeah. We just press pause on life while we go work through this emotion. For me, it was very actually what we were just talking about. It moved from a doing, even questioning, contemplating, and feeling the emotions, and questioning the belief behind the emotion, was just more and more ongoing. So that there was just doing. If I was in the middle of a, I became aware at some point, and probably everybody experiences this at some point, where I had this revelation that every single one of my relationships, whether romantic or, you know, my kids, my parents, all of it, my sister, it's like I don't know how to be in a relationship without wanting or needing anything from this person. It was just stunningly. Like, oh my goodness, I've never ever been, you know, had a interaction with someone before where I didn't need anything from them. It was like, you know, just hit me. And then I was suddenly more aware of all the times I was trying to get something from someone. Like, if I talk to you nicely, you'll like me more and I'll feel more approved of or respected or something. So there was that coming up while I was interacting. And I would, in that moment, try to just be present and feel the emotion and listen to what the person was saying. And I might go back afterwards and look at, well, there was a lot of frustration when I was listening to them. There must be some sense that I need something from them. What's the idea behind frustration? Or, you know, with that person, I was downright angry. Or this person just rubs me up the, you know, so there's a looking at it afterwards as well. But even that, you can, you know, as it becomes clear that the contemplation is just going on in the mind, that you're not even doing that, and that the body's just feeling the emotion anyway. It's more of the sense of I dissolves the separate self. It's quite possible to be even having an argument with someone and questioning underneath is just an openness, like, this isn't really true. And I remember one time it actually happened. I was actually having an argument with someone, and there was this intense need to be right, you know, like, I'm sure nobody else has ever felt that ever. I have to win this argument, you know, I have to get my point across here. And at the same time, I was just this, it was something about I need to be respected, you know, that was the thing behind it. And there was a lot of anger, and this contemplation was going on inside quietly at the same time, this anger. I sort of recognised there was a moment happening here where I could transcend something. And just both of us, without me saying anything, both of us just started laughing at the ridiculousness of this argument. And the person I was arguing with wasn't in satsang or anything. They didn't know what was going on, but it was just this little moment where my need to be right just completely disappeared. And it just turned into something. You know, we sat down afterwards and had a chat about it and a cup of tea, and we were just like, what was that about? Like, you know, I knew what had happened inside me. They didn't understand, but it was fine. So it's kind of a long answer to a short question. Sorry, even that becomes a continuous thing that's just going on. Mm. Like while I'm talking in satsang and somebody's asking me a question, let's say somebody asked me a question about fear, there'll be this questioning going on as well in my being. Is that really true? It's just happening inside, even though it's another body that's voicing that. Mm. It must be inside me still. Mm. So there's a question, is that true? Mm. And sometimes if everyone's questions in satsang and the course have been about fear, for example, that week, mm. there'll be a little, maybe a little spontaneous questioning happening within my own being. There must be a remnant still somewhere, you know, if I'm not safe or something.
Yeah, definitely. It's continuously happening. And there's just a couple of times where I felt like, there was kind of a mutual reaction that rose up, and it was like, oh, you know, mm-hmm. at that moment when it was a bit too raw to really see through in that moment, it was like, oh, yeah. You know, should there be a stepping away?
There'll be times when you can do it there and then, times when you can't. Mm-hmm. But because there is no time, you haven't lost anything mm-hmm. in that moment. If you don't manage to work through that thing inside you immediately right there, you can go mm-hmm. back to it afterwards in the mm-hmm. calmness of your own. You know, you can even look at something now that happened 10 years ago and undo the belief. You know, so there is no time in that way. Mm. And this becomes clearer as you see, even the contemplation is just mind asking more intelligent questions, mm. you know, that's going on even without our volition. And there became more of a sense for me that I was only ever experiencing two states. Like any argument or anything going wrong, any sense of anything going wrong within myself or out there was a sense of being limited and finite. Yeah. Like I've been contemplating the question, what is it like to be a separate being? And my life was showing me the answer to that question. So the contemplation even became very, very simple. Like, this isn't reality. It was just aware, whichever way it was showing it, this isn't reality. This is my virtual reality. Mm. So that right there in the moment, there's like, okay, what is reality then? You know, recognition that I'm feeling limited again mm. and that I am actually unlimited. So there was more of a
quick undoing sort of, yeah.
Yeah, whether it's shame, whatever the belief is on that whole list, they're all about feeling limited, aren't they? You know, mm. finite and limited. And so the easy out of that is, okay, what's it like to be unlimited? What's it like to be infinite? What's it like to be myself? Or what is reality mm. like? You know, that. So that was a kind of a growing thing inside that was just more and more my go-to question, because everything else hung on this idea that I was a finite, limited being. You see that popping up in all the different ways. Well, depending on where your karmic patterns play, if it's relationships, that's how it plays, or whatever, mm. or several ways. Mm. So that the question gets... It changes around at first, and as these big emotions come up, as we start to understand causality, you know, is it really true I'm not safe? Is it really true I'm not good enough? Mm. But then eventually it's just, is it really true I was ever limited, or I was ever separate, or I was ever finite? That's kind of catch it all question.
Yeah. I think you were discussing last week, have I ever suffered and things like that, and there's more of a sense after last week of you know, because I've been listening to the like non-duality for so long, but it's just kind of dawning on a deeper level that mm. the whole of Amy is not really who I am. Do you know what I mean? Like on and it's very subtle, it's not a big bang or anything, but it's just kind of
it's just growing. That's it's what growing. I've been hearing. Quiet but convinced knowingness, isn't it? That mm. that actually I've just been experiencing what it's like to be a limited. I've been experiencing the idea I am this body in all the ways it can be experienced. And then there's just a stepping out of that more and more, isn't it? That's happening more and more. Just what's it like to be myself then, actually?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I'm so, just so grateful. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Lovely.
Thank
you. Fantastic. Good, good. Keep up the good work.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mike's, let me just.
Okay. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me all right? Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. So you sort of, I think you sort of answered my question when you were talking to Amy about relationships. I was really wondering what it's like for you as a spiritual teacher. Because when I think about, you know, the things that you might have to go through. I mean, I remember hearing one spiritual teacher saying that a satsang
it was all unicorns and rainbows. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember that one spiritual teacher saying that this one guy at a satsang came and sat his chair right in front of him, and in the very end of him, explained for 20 minutes to the guy that he was the Antichrist and he was evil and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, I couldn't imagine going through something like that. Or just people coming to you with problems that, you know, are really deep existential problems dealing with death. I remember another lady going to another teacher because her son had just died, and she was very much in the ego and not understanding any of it. And so how to handle that. And just the kind of relationships that people have with you were very different than a normal quote unquote office relationship.
Yeah.
And I could sort of see from, you know, as the one seeing yourself, the answers probably would just come. But as an ego, I was wondering if there was a working through period of all these triggering, fluttering thoughts and emotions, like what the heck am I doing, or nervousness, or if somebody's like attacking you, that had to be worked through in the system to get to where you are now.
It still surprises me, people. There's some unique challenges to being a teacher. because 99% of people I meet are, what's the best way to put it, willing to admit that they may be wrong in their assumptions, and that's why they're asking me. Occasionally there are people that are absolutely sure they're right, and they know better than me. I'm not saying I know better than them, I don't know anything, but occasionally I've been called a charlatan, I've been called devil worshipper, I've been told before that I'm going to I'm bringing about the end of the world or something, you know, some similar. It wasn't quite as polite as that, but there's a knowingness in that moment that it's me talking to me, and that's what I look like when I'm completely unaware of my true nature, you know, that is happening. Because sometimes there's a knowingness that this person just needs to express their darkest fears in a place where it won't be projected back onto them. You know, that the ego secretly worries that God it is the God of the Old Testament as far as ego sees, and very vengeful, wrathful, smites people just because it's, you know, he's got nothing else to do or something. So there's a misunderstanding in most people about the nature of the self, you know, and there was, you know, these fears get projected onto the teacher if they're not capable of, and the person most times doesn't even mean to do it, that sometimes it just ends up happening. There's a sense of compassion and understanding. At the same time, there'll be a, you know, if someone is attacking me personally, you know, there'll be a defense against that. I'm not just going to be a doormat. You know, there'll be a sense of whatever needs to be said will be said. Most times that there is, I think I touched upon it before, there's the most work I'm doing is with the presence. You know, it's not really the words. So people will come to that presence for all kinds of reasons, just sometimes to feel safe, sometimes to feel better. sometimes to offload some karma. And sometimes that's what's occurring when someone is talking like that. You know, from the ego's perspective, why did that person come and talk to that teacher if they're not able to listen or want to listen to them even? Why have they done that? Sometimes it's just a safe place where they're not, like if you go and say the same things, that would be a very personal attack on someone. If you said it to someone else, it would be projected right back onto you. But there's a knowingness because that person is the self, even though they're unaware that I can do it with this person. They're not going to take it personally, not going to launch a counterattack. Can you get a sense of it?
Yeah, I would assume so. It's a very intuitive, organic knowing that the right thing will be said, even if it seems like it's, you know, I think we talked about this before. The tone of the message will change based on the situation, but there's a knowing that that's the right thing to say at that time.
Yeah, and there's a recognition. Some people even end up in satsang when they're not able to hear or not able to transcend fear, and they will move away from satsang for a while. But they it's almost like they had to know that unconditional love and acceptance was there, that this teacher or whoever is doing it, sees their worst faults and flaws and doesn't actually see anything wrong with them still. You know, that was what it was about in that moment or something.
And you never feel like if someone comes and attacks you all of a sudden emotionally, says things to you, that causality thought doesn't come in? Like, am I vibrating something that's causing this to happen? Or is it more that this person, you know, there's feels the need to discharge that energy? Because
it's probably a little bit of both. It's not either one or the other. You know, there's a sense, it's obviously a contracted form in the person that's attacking, but there's also, there'll be a looking like, is there anything left in there, in here to look at, you know, that this is mirroring back to me. But there is less of a sense, there isn't any sense for me now that I've done, I've worked through my karma, that's it, I'm finished, I'm free of my patterns. That sense has extended to the whole of humanity. So when that person's attacking me, I'm still working through my karma, you know, with a capital M. There isn't any separation left, as in, right, I've transcended my stuff, I'm fine now, and my awakening's finished. It just isn't like that. There's a sense of it opening up into, it may look like I'm holding satsang, but I'm actually continuing my awakening in other bodies. So there'll be always a looking. Humanity is going to show me the best and the worst of myself, you could say. Or the most aware of my real nature and what happens when I'm most unaware. You know, that's always been mirrored back in those reflections.
Okay.
Good, good. Lovely. Did I answer the question?
It did. I just, you know, it's just a very different job description. So
it's an interesting. You know. It's before you're a spiritual teacher, you think, oh, wow, that'd be so cool, and then afterwards, you think, not so much sometimes. But
yeah,
it's the most amazing rewards ever. You know, I get to watch myself wake up over and over again. It's just beyond amazing. Even the attacks aren't really, there's nothing that can take them personal, you know, so it's just, you know, that would have been this body doing it a while ago, you know, arguing with somebody. So it's just happening in another body, isn't it?
Hmm.
Good, good. Lovely. Thank you. Okay, does anybody else want to ask anything, or are we all finished? Maggie and Ian, or Maggie or Ian?
Sorry, I've talked loads today, but one of Lena's questions, I just wanted to share something, actually. We were at a funeral yesterday, Ian's dad, and it was part of me absolutely dreading it, and it was going to be a very different funeral, and I've always been a very, very, Helen will laugh at this, a very emotional person. I can cry at anything. My kids laugh. I cry at adverts on the TV, etc. And I was looking at this experience and how, whether there was any emotion there, and it was a very different type of experience in any sense of a funeral, in that we couldn't hug any of the family, most of the family couldn't be there, and so it was all very strange on top of everything else. And for me, I did shed a tear yesterday, but I recognised that I wasn't suffering at all. There was a I was okay with it. There was a, like Helen talked about, a sense, the sense of loss. There isn't a loss, but I knew that for the kids, and it wasn't, there weren't fake tears, I've got to add, but I knew that my kids needed to see me that way because that's what I'm like, and to have been any other way would have been very difficult for them, and we were all together being like that, standing apart, but together being like that. So I just wanted to you know, we've experienced a death in the family very recently, and it's been a very different experience to any other one that we've experienced.
It's quite strange, isn't it, the first time you go through it afterwards, because it is very, very different. It's not like you think it's going to be.
Yeah, because there was a...
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think you might have said, touched on it earlier, it doesn't feel like he's gone. Because he's still, as well as just being in my thoughts and my memories, it doesn't feel like he's gone, which is really weird. Because it wasn't quite the same when my mum passed about 5 years ago. There was a sense of quite a big loss.
And yet on paper, you know, with your dad passing, there could technically be a lot more reason to suffer. Like, you couldn't see him right before, you know, only that last time, and then the funeral being very, very different. You know, it just goes to show really how far you've come with that. That it hasn't been a usual, if there ever is a usual process in this at all, has it? You know, it's been completely the opposite with the lockdown. So, you know, it's good to...
I can see that. Even though my dad was not spiritual in the slightest.
Say the least.
He's been a really big teacher for me.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I feel quite blessed I had some time to really get to know him again. So it was quite nice. But yeah, I don't feel like he's gone at all.
Oh, that's lovely. That really is good.
When you talk, keep thinking about miracles, I keep kind of remembering little ones. And the last time I saw Ian's dad, because he lived around the corner from us in a home, and due to lockdown, we couldn't see him for quite a few weeks. But the last time I saw him, sometimes we'd hug goodbye, sometimes we'd just say goodbye, sometimes he'd say, give me a kiss or whatever. And he said to me, specifically, he said, give me a kiss, Maggie. And it just, for me, that's so special, you know, it was so nice that that happened, and that's a miracle for me, because it didn't happen that often.
No, yeah. Quite different.
Just wanted to share that the emotion was kind of there yesterday, but there was no suffering around it at all.
Yeah, the self is totally appropriate and compassionate, isn't it? And if you're surrounded by beings that are really grieving, and it would hurt them more.
Oh, absolutely.
To see you seemingly not suffering, they're not capable of understanding yet, not in the satsang, and not interested in that yet, then there sometimes is a spontaneous and appropriate response from the body that is the kindest thing to do. Again, not false tears, but just the sense of, this is what is expected of a human being, isn't it? You know, and it would be disturbing if that didn't happen for other beings.
I just want to add very briefly, sorry, just remember that there was a resistance before when he actually passed, and there was emotion. There was a resistance to that emotion because I thought I shouldn't be feeling anything now. this time it was absolutely okay. I just let me myself feel what I felt, and in that there wasn't any suffering.
I mean, I have no idea what my body would do at a funeral now. It would do whatever it does, mm-hmm. and whatever it does is fine. Mm. You know, that's the kind of the whole way of life then, isn't it?
Yeah, I kind of tease in my eyes, but when they play the music, I was kind of swaying to the music.
Dancing.
I was just thinking of my dad singing. Yeah. I could just picture my dad singing it. He had quite a good voice, unlike me. And he used to sing in the lounge when he'd come home from school sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I was just there, you know.
Yeah. It was a beautiful experience, to be honest. And in this lockdown, when we can't see a lot of our family because they all live away, we were able to see them briefly. We weren't allowed to touch them or any of that, which was in a way difficult, but we were able to actually be with them. So mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say one thing. Just by saying that and looking at that fact he's not gone, I hadn't realised it before until I just said that to you.
Yeah,
I don't feel like he's gone.
Because he hasn't, right?
No.
He's just out of the range of your human perception.
Yeah.
You know, and that feels very, very different, and it's very true.
Yeah.
Nothing has ever gone, ever. And that's very clear in the awakened state. Mm. And never does it have a more profound effect than when we seemingly, you know, someone goes. That's the essence of suffering, isn't it, really? Mm. Well, thank you for sharing that, both of you.
Thank you.
Last question, Sheena.
Hello.
Excuse me.
It was just carrying on that from that, really. That it's like when my partner died 3 years ago, and it was a massive shock. And obviously, it feels a lot different now to it did then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the thing that obviously he was there with me every day, and you miss like just the laugh or seeing him play with my son and seeing him, you know. I think now while I look and I think it'd be wonderful to see how they'd talk now. The question.
It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry.
Do you not miss, you know, I know that you say that they're not, you don't feel like they're gone, but do you not then like miss, say, like their laugh or their humour or just
there's
in human body?
There's a appreciation for the unique and individual way that the self showed up as everyone. You know, my dad used to wear this particular aftershave, and every time I smell it, these wonderful, it still makes me feel safe and secure now, because I always remember that's the kind of association of, you know, so there's an appreciation of it'll never ever again show up like it did in that person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if there is a sense of missing something, it might be that unique way, but that it appeared as that person. But it's like the ocean trying to miss a wave, you know, a certain wave when it's seemingly, has the wave disappeared or has it just, you know, flattened back out again? If there isn't any sense that anything has changed at all, can there be any negative emotion around it? You know, I know it's very challenging to really get this at first, but I can only suffer or miss someone in a bad way, you know, produce negative emotions if I really believe that something has changed and happened and they've actually gone. You know, that when that really sinks deeply into the core of your being, you might find yourself reminiscing about that person, but it will be, you know, remembering about a person, but it'll be with a sense of joy and a uniqueness that was the way that the whole entire cosmos showed up as that person in that, you know, in that unique way.
I do more so now feel it that way. I like I'll talk talk to people about him, and I bring him up quite often. And they seem more uncomfortable than me. I can just say, oh yeah, Liam used to do this, and I tell a joke, or that was something that he used to do or something.
Mm-hmm.
But at first, obviously, it was very that hurting feeling that he was gone.
It's harder sometimes to deal with other people's feelings because they're expecting you to feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they're even sometimes uncomfortable when you don't feel bad. You know, the usual, the normal, everyday, egoic. There's a sense that you lose someone close to you like that, you're never going to be the same again, you know. But eventually, it's a recognition that I haven't lost anything and I can't lose anything ever. And that person is just not capable of leaving. You know, Ramana said when he was, I don't know the exact words, but when he was about to die, you know, leave his body, everyone said, don't leave us. And he said, well, where would I go anyway? You know, and whether they understood that or not, I don't know, those people around him, but he was pointing to that same thing, really.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry, my son came in then.
It's okay. It's fine. It's fine. So, yeah. It's just keep applying what you're seeing and keep questioning it, you know, even to the point where you can't talk about someone in the past tense. You know.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. Yeah, I called you when I do that now, and I realize, oh, I do speak as if he's here sometimes. Yeah.
Mm.
When I'm speaking. Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Wonderful. Okay. We'll leave it there for today then. I'll stop this recording.